In the Ongo, we're reading and discussing some of the poetry and songs of the Zen ancestors. And I've chosen to talk about Hakuin's Song of Zazen. But first, I want to read to you a koan that I've been working with lately. It's about Satsujo, who was a great disciple of Hakuin's, a woman. And she came to have a considerable influence on how I related to this song. So the koan case is, when Satsujo was old, she lost her granddaughter, which grieved her very much. An old man from the neighborhood came and admonished her, "Why are you wailing so much? If people hear this, they'll all say, 'The old lady once studied with Hakuin and was enlightened, so now why is she mourning her granddaughter so much? You ought to lighten up a bit.'" Satsujo glared at her neighbor and scolded him. "You bald-headed fool, what do you know? My tears and weeping are better for my granddaughter than incense, flowers, and lamps." And the old man left without a word. So Hakuin was a Japanese Rinzai Zen master of the 18th century. So I'd like just to read the song together. "Sentient beings are intrinsically Buddha. It is like ice and water. Apart from water, there is no ice. Apart from sentient beings, there is no Buddha. Not knowing how near the truth is, we seek it far away. What a pity. We are like a person swimming in clear water and crying out in thirst. We are like the son of a rich man who wandered away among the poor. The reason we transmigrate throughout the six worlds is that we are lost in the darkness of ignorance, going astray further and further in the darkness. When will we be free from birth and death? As for the Mahayana practice of Zazen, we have no words to praise it fully. The virtues of perfection, charity, morality, the invocation of the Buddha's name, confession and ascetic discipline, and many other good deeds of merit all find their source in Zazen. Even those who sit just once will see all their evil karma erased. Nowhere will they find evil paths, but the pure land will be near at hand. If we listen to this truth even once with a reverential heart and gladly praise and embrace it, we will surely be infinitely blessed. If we concentrate within and testify to the truth that self-nature is no nature, we have surely gone beyond foolish talk. The gate of oneness of cause and effect opens. The non-dual, non-triple world lies straight ahead. The formless form being now your form, you do not go astray. The thought that is no thought, being now your thought, singing and dancing are your voice of the Dharma. Boundless and free is the clear sky of Samadhi, perfect and bright the full moon of wisdom. At this moment, what more do you seek? With the truth eternally revealed, this very place is the lotus land of liberty. This very body is the Buddha. So I'm going to go through the song and offer my impressions and associations that it inspired. And I invite you to have your own free associations. And this is the way that we've been sharing in the Ongo. Sentient beings are intrinsically Buddha, like ice and water. Apart from water, there is no ice. Apart from sentient beings, there is no Buddha. This expresses a concept that appeals to me deeply. It feels natural and true. The intrinsic presence of Buddha is right here in each one of us. I feel a sense of union and merging that's soothing to my soul. I sense the presence of a deeper dimension of myself that I don't fully access. It gives me the sense of having a core that provides me with strength, but also something flexible that eases my alienation and isolation. It seems to reach down deep into the pit of my stomach and settle me there. Not knowing how near the truth is, we seek it far away. What a pity. There's a way in which hugging this concept of Buddha to myself and identifying with it is a seeking far away. It's the distance between my ideas of things and the true actuality of them. It's not that my ideas are wrong. They might be as close and accurate as any idea can get. We have the assistance of many fine Buddhist teachers to help us hone very good and accurate ideas of what reality is, but they are a far distance from the actual heart-pulsing reality of life. The song of the precious mirror Samadhi says, "A hair's breadth deviation and you are out of tune." So here I'm seeing the hair's breadth deviation as the far away where we go seeking in our ideas and concepts. We are like a person swimming in clear water and crying out in thirst. Here, the hair's breadth deviation is so minute there is no gap. We are submerged in our lives in a way that we can't make good use of them. We can't access our resources. We're dying of thirst. We're groping wildly in all directions because we can't see what we are immersed in. When we can't distinguish a separation between self and other or ourselves in the world, we can't engage in a useful or creative way. When our individual uniqueness is lost or submerged in an oceanic idea like Buddha nature, it's like a vast ocean with no fish in it. It's sterile and dead. It may be crystal clear, but there's no life in it. We are like the son of a rich man who wandered away among the poor. He's referring here to the parable of the rich man in the Lotus Sutra. And it's a story the Buddha used to describe the way we wander off and get lost and become destitute, not knowing our true heritage, and the slow, patient process of how we are guided back to ourselves. He's expressing our Buddha nature as a rich and loving father guiding us home. It's taken me a long time to warm up to this story, but I have come to appreciate it. I appreciate very much Hawkwind's choice of these two analogies, water and a family relationship, the father and son. Water is the element of emotions. Our lives are immersed in the sea of emotions. Emotion, as energy moving out, is the way we draw forth our deep inner selves and share ourselves with the world. Family relationships, whether a blood family or your heart family, are at the core of our lives. These images he chooses dip us into the very cauldron of life, the messy, difficult, relentlessly unresolvable cauldron of emotional and family life. How on earth could this be a path to perfection? In Zen, I think perfection means to accord with reality. It's not some abstract, distant ideal, just to live in accord with reality. The reason we transmigrate throughout the six worlds is because we are lost in the darkness of ignorance. The six worlds represent all the forms of suffering we can encounter in life. Ignorance is the cause of suffering. Not knowing the true nature of things is the cause of suffering. Without discovering or uncovering the guiding light we have buried in ourselves, we wander aimlessly in the dark, round and round, through all the forms of suffering. Going astray further and further in the darkness, when will we be free from birth and death? And I read this as free in birth and death, to be clear that we're not looking to do away with birth or death. We're seeking to be free in them. To do away with birth and death would leave us no place to live our lives and no self to have any experience. This line feels like reaching the end of our rope. He's exclaiming the ultimate despair. When will I ever be free? It's an odd thing, but it seems we have to reach such a point before we can open ourselves in the manner necessary to receive a light that's already deep within us. It's an opening of the deep self that seems to have to involve vulnerability. Our ability to be vulnerable is a true gift. It's the crack that allows us to perceive our own light. As for the Mahayana practice of Zazen, we have no words to praise it. The virtues of perfection, charity, morality, the invocation of the Buddha's name, confession, and ascetic discipline, and many other good deeds of merit all come from the practice of Zazen. So what is Zazen? Not thinking good, not thinking bad, not mental activity of any kind, not contemplation or reflection or introspection, not learning meditation. It's dropping off body and mind, yet it's a body practice. It's turning a light to shine within, yet the light within is always shining. It is activity beyond human hearing and seeing, a principle prior to human knowledge or perception. And all these references are from Dogen, from his universal promotion of the principles of Zazen. It's called the Fukan Zazingi. And he also says, the practice of Zen has nothing whatever to do with the four bodily attitudes of moving, standing, sitting, or lying down. Yet he carefully describes the physical posture for Zazen. Zazen is an endlessly faceted jewel. The Song of Awakening says, Buddha nature, jewel of the precepts, is the foundation of our minds. And just so we can say, Zazen, jewel of the precepts, is the foundation of our minds. And this is what Hakuin points to, that Zazen and the virtues of perfection are inseparable. The virtues of perfection include the paramitas, the precepts, the Eightfold Path, the Bodhisattva vows, all the wisdom teachings as the activity body of our practice. And Zazen is inseparable from them. My body and the body of our whole shared practice are inseparable from one another. How could Zazen just be when sitting on a cushion? We can't leave it behind when we stand up. And how could just sitting on a cushion be so vast? It's a profound, deep root we connect to when we sit Zazen. Its branches extend everywhere. Even those who sit just once will see all their evil karma erased. Nowhere will they find evil paths, but the pure land will be near at hand. So even to sit just once quietly and observe the coming and going of thoughts, the flow and change of ideas, good and bad, right and wrong, observing it all appear and disappear from our still place of sitting, is to see the evil karma erased, gone with the thought, the good karma erased, gone with the thought. What's left is our free and abiding presence in this actual moment. Zazen is sometimes referred to as an acupuncture needle. It can open the blockages in our natural free-flowing energy. With a reverential heart, if we listen to this truth even once and gladly praise and embrace it, we will surely be infinitely blessed. So recently, I was thinking about all of you and wondering, what is it that brings you here? I decided that it was some sort of a reverence in your hearts that's being met or fed by coming here. And it's the same reason why I'm here. The reverence is different and unique in each one of us. It's something very personal and intimate, yet at the same time, it's what we share. Recognizing this gave me a wonderful sense of belonging with all of you. When we listen to anyone with a reverential heart, we give and receive infinite blessing. If we concentrate within and testify to the truth that self-nature is no nature, we have surely gone beyond foolish talk. So in Buddhism, these expressions of no nature, no form, no eyes, no ears, are expressing the emptiness of things, meaning they have no separate existence from other things. Everything has its place as part of the webwork of existence. Nothing is an island unto itself. In the shared experience of our reverential hearts and the sense of belonging it can create, we can know our self-nature as no nature. Our self-nature becomes deeply connected nature. Our self-nature can't be a separate existence. And Satsujo's response of grief and tears were a vivid and spontaneous expression of the deep connectedness she felt with her granddaughter. Her flowing of emotion expresses things that words can't even touch. It goes far beyond foolish talk. The gate of oneness of cause and effect opens. The non-dual, non-triple road lies straight ahead. A cause can't be contained and seen as separate from effects. Whatever exists as a cause came into being as an effect, and whatever exists as an effect comes into being as a cause. There's no barrier. The web of interconnection flows out in all directions. The gate of oneness is open, and we can go in and out freely, nourishing our differentiated worlds from the vast well of interconnection. This is the gate that the acupuncture needle of Zazen opens. The formless form being now your form, you don't go astray. And this marks the difference between an uncultivated, unskillful emotional life and one that has grown up on the ground of practice like Satsujo's. Formless form means infinite, vast, with no limitations. And being so vast and interconnected, it's very stable. any direction you turn, you find access. Your own life is the expression of this formless form. We can't help but express its potentialities. The thought that is no thought, being now your thought, singing and dancing are your voice of the Dharma. So when your thoughts and responses are grounded in interconnection, they'll harmonize with circumstances and bring peace and beauty to your environment. I was thinking of the varieties of songs and dances in the world, imagining all the dramas of history that have been expressed through song and dance. And we have ballet and opera and tribal dance and rock and roll and dances with wolves and the dances of cranes. And it would make an incredible list to try and include them all. All the possibilities of life are expressed this way. Boundless and free is the clear sky of samadhi, perfect and bright the full moon of wisdom. To learn to live in accord with reality, to be unobstructed clear through to our brightness, is the aim of our practice. The nature of the mind is just this brightness that illuminates the true nature of all forms. If we touch, taste, hear, or see the brightness of forms, we are satisfied to a depth that unburdens us. We can let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. And at this moment, what more do you seek? With the truth eternally revealed, this very place is the lotus land of liberty. At these moments, our sense of expansion and inclusion are so complete that nothing stands outside us to be sought. This very place where you stand, where you are in accord with reality, is your place of freedom, your inheritance that the parable speaks of. This very body is the body of Buddha. So we come back then to the same place where we started, but now the image is filled with the luminosity of our inner light. The need that we feel for the experience of knowing our lives fully and deeply is not separate from the need of the one body for our participation. How could this practice satisfy our needs and desires if it didn't share our needs and desires? We offer each other the opportunity to experience our wholeness through belonging. Welcoming others to belong with us, allowing ourselves to be vulnerable enough to belong with others. We all have a longing to belong. It's the only way we can ever feel whole. And so there's just one other thing I wanted to mention about this experience of belonging. That I just recognized when I was working on the talk, but I realized that it's been kind of growing in me over a longer period of time. And it's significant in the influence that it has on my leaving. I'm going to be moving back to Florida here in a few weeks. And I know that if I had left, say, 2 months ago, that leaving would have been a sort of closing one chapter of my life and then going off into a new one. But this experience of belonging that I've come to realize with the Sangha will make that move a lot different. I will be taking all of you with me, and it will expand my life rather than cutting off and starting something new. It will just be a continuing and a great expansion. And I want all of you that have been here for so many years working with me and supporting me to really receive my appreciation. I feel a great sense of loyalty in the support that I've had from you over the years. And it will make my going back to my old friends in Florida a much richer experience than it would have been if I had just stayed there and never come here. So thank you. If anybody has any impressions of the poem or anything they want to share.
Can you talk a little bit about the koan and how it impacted you and related to the song?
Yeah, well, Satsujo, you know, just to me, she's the sort of heroine the heroine of, you know, emotions. And I was having a fun fantasy imagining her as a young woman, you know, and maybe she was like passionate and fiery and had maybe a lot of, you know, romantic relationships or something that went bad. And and so maybe that, you know, had her decide she had to go find some stability in life or, you know, do something. It might have been her pit of despair. But anyway, something, you know, took her into practice. And through then working with forms, you know, lighting incense, sitting zazen, the things that we do, over years and years, she kind of found her way through to her inner light and that stability that can come from it. And then her, you know, expressions of an emotional or passionate nature would have been, you know, stable and inclusive of the world rather than something that was a painful suffering that might have left her, you know, alone. So, you know, all of that's just real important to me in terms of this practice and how we do it, that it open the richness of our human lives and in a way that we can share it skillfully, you know, with each other and find extension, you know, rather than alienation.